Welcome to Coffee with the Coaching Revolutionaries from thecoachingrevolution.com.
Good morning, everybody, and welcome to Coffee with the Coaching Revolutionaries. Do not adjust your sets. This is not Sir Short. This is Jeff Matthews. But today I am actually talking to the original Che Guevara of coaching, our own coaching revolutionary. Good morning, Sarah.
Good morning, Jeff. This is a bit tables turned. Feels quite unusual to be in this seat.
Yeah, but it's going to be fun. I know it's going to be fun. Yeah. How are you doing anyway today?
I'm very well. Got my coffee pot primed. Looking forward to it.
Brilliant. Okay. So tell us a little bit about yourself. You're living in Cumbria at the moment. That's where home is, yeah?
It is. I live on the edge of Cumbria, on the very southern edge. So I'm between Lancaster and Kendal. And what that means is I'm in the middle of nowhere, so I've got fields all the way around me, and we have, you know, sheep, deer, all of that kind of stuff doing their thing. But it also means I'm only sort of 15, 20 minutes away from the Lake District. But the most important bit, and the older I've got, the more important this has become, I can get to the motorway really easily. I don't get snarled up in bank holiday traffic. You know, I don't get stuck in the lakes where I've lived all over the lakes, and you get stuck there on a bank holiday weekend and you can't do anything, so you just have to stay home, which is fine until the weekend you don't want to stay home, and then it's not fine.
It sounds good, and because you live in the country, my guess is you have a little bit of a menagerie there as well. Is that right?
I have a zoo. I have a veritable zoo. I started off when I moved here, I had a cat. She's called Scammer, and she's called Scammer because in 2009 she appeared at the back door of the house I was living in and sat on that doorstep for 4 days, and eventually I felt sorry for her and she scammed away in the house, and we've still got her. She arrived as a fully grown, clearly neutered female cat, and she's now the matriarch. And since her, we've had another two cats added to the zoo, and then my dog, and then my other dog, and now I have a third dog, kind of, that I have shares in. It's my dad's dog. My dad sadly died last year, and now I have his little Patterdale on a share with my daughter. So I have three dogs and three cats. Long answer.
You have this house with this kind of animal magnet to it, I can tell.
It is my animal magnetism, I believe.
Okay, and tell us, just go back to way back when. Tell us about school and university, because I think you studied in Manchester, didn't you?
Yeah, well, actually, no, I didn't. But where I studied became absorbed by Manchester Metropolitan. So I went to school in Heywood, which is a little town in the north of Manchester. And it's kind of, people tend to know Rochdale, which is Bury, which are its nearest neighbours, and it's sandwiched between the two. It's a mill town, proper, good old fashioned Lancashire town. And I went to secondary school there, lived there with my mum and my stepdad and my three brothers. And when I finished school, I went to Rochdale College and did a second sixth form in a new course. It was a newfangled thing that was just coming out in the early 80s. It was expressive arts. And what it meant was that I could go to university to study drama. I wanted a drama. Yeah. I wanted to be a drama teacher. That was where my heart lay. So I did this this course at Rochdale College, and I went to what was Crewe and Nulsager College, which was a teacher training college, and it had this big creative arts department, so dance, drama, fine art, music, etc. And I arrived there in September of 1985 to study secondary drama, a B.Ed. in secondary drama. And as I was doing the sign-in thing, I was taken to one side to be told that the then Tory government, Thatcher Tory government, had removed the funding for secondary drama. Sorry, Sarah, but you can do primary if you want. And I'm standing there. I'd moved, you know? I was like...
You'd made that choice.
Absolutely. Yeah. So I said, yeah, okay. Okay, well, you know, I'm not going to go home, am I? I've moved in. So I agreed to do a primary course. Anyway, I didn't even last a year. I don't want to be a primary school teacher. So I transferred to a BA honours degree, and I sort of did drama, dance, performing arts. It was called creative arts back in the day.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay. It was a performing arts degree. And And it was great. It was great. You know, I'm still in touch with a couple of people that I've known from then, including one of my tutors who I didn't see for 20 odd years. And then we found each other and she pitched up here and she was here for about 10 minutes and we booked a holiday to Cuba years ago. That was fun. But yeah, so my background, although I finished my performing arts degree, I didn't want to be an actor. Wasn't my thing. I enjoyed doing it, and by all accounts, yeah, I got good marks for my acting. So I was reasonably good at it. But I think there's a thing about being a teacher or a trainer that it's like a Blackpool Rock thing. If you cut somebody in half, they just say, you know, L&D, don't they? You've been in L&D. It's what, once a teacher, always a teacher.
I'm married to a teacher.
Oh, there you go. So I have taught very little in mainstream education. I have taught a bit, but it's not for me. So I ended up working in IT between leaving university and having my children, which I had my eldest daughter when I was 31. But what I was doing in IT was training, training and consultancy. And then when I had my children, I have two and they're 5 years apart. When I was kind of ready to be thinking about going back to work, I'd had 7 years out, and 7 years out of IT is like, you know, Windows was just coming in when I had my first daughter. I had my second in 2001 and then was thinking about going back to work in 2003. It's like the world had turned.
And the whole industry had overtaken you.
Absolutely. And I could have gone back and retrained, but I didn't care anymore. I didn't care about it like I had. And so I opened a children's drama school.
Okay.
It was a franchise. I bought the franchise in an area where it hadn't existed before. And within five terms, we had best part of 1,000 kids taking classes all over the place, nine teachers, etc. And I was offered the opportunity to go and open a drama school in Botswana. Actually, they said Africa, pick a country. And my first thought was, I don't want to go to Africa, people die there. And of course, you know, this is what we hear, isn't it, about Africa? We only ever hear the bad news. We don't hear the absolutely wonderful, you know, amazing place that it is.
And it's a beautiful country, Botswana, I believe.
It's stunning, absolutely stunning. And I stayed there, we moved there, and I stayed there until 2008, at which point, very sadly, my marriage broke down and I came back to the UK with the children. And at that point, I discovered coaching. So what happened was I was fed up. I'd left Botswana in the middle of their summer, you know, December 2008, and I'd arrived back to the middle of our winter. So I'd gone from 40 degrees and sunny and gorgeous to -6 and bloody freezing and dark. And by February of that year, I was feeling fed up. One of my friends said to me, "You are normally nauseatingly optimistic," which I think was a compliment. And she said, "And you're being a proper misery. And I just wonder if perhaps you might want to speak to a life coach."
Okay.
And I said, "What's a life coach?" And the rest...
The rest is history.
It's history, yeah.
So that's a really nice link in, because I discovered you on YouTube doing a TEDx talk in Knutsford, which probably would have been about... Cheshire. It's Cheshire.
Yeah, Cheshire.
And it was probably, what, 3, maybe 4 years ago you did that?
November 2016 it was, yeah.
Okay, yeah. So 3.5 years ago. And I remember the subject was something along the lines of, are we teaching our children the wrong things in school? Maybe.
Yeah.
And here we are 3.5 years on. And I kind of got your views from that video by watching it. And because my wife works in education and we have five kids between us, I took a really keen interest in that. I'd just be very quickly interested to get your views now, 3.5 years on, in terms of curriculums, kids, where we're going.
Well, when I did that TED talk, nobody was talking about what I talked about. So what I talked about was the fact that I believe that we're teaching the wrong things in schools, because what we're still teaching, what we've been teaching for hundreds of years and we're still teaching now, is we teach children how to be good employees.
Yeah.
And there were jobs for life up until very recently.
Yeah.
However, those jobs don't exist anymore. That world doesn't exist anymore. And so I believe that we should be teaching kids entrepreneurial skills. We should be teaching them flexibility. We should be teaching them how to spot an opportunity, how to maximize that opportunity, how to understand how to create a market. And in particular, I think that we as a nation are predominantly employees, or we predominantly come from an employed background. I'm really unusual because I've only ever worked for somebody else for about 5 years in my whole career, because I'm just a really shit employee. It's the honest truth. But
well, you are a revolutionary after all, Sarah, so there you go.
Yeah, it's taken me this long to get on with it. But the thing about business development is that what we think we know, and I know this from the literally hundreds and hundreds of coaches that I've spoken to, we feel if we have an offering, what we need to do is cast our nets wide and market to anyone who might benefit from what we've got to offer. And in actual fact, as undoubtedly everybody's heard me say a million times, the absolute opposite is true. And those are the kind of things, you know, we've got kids leaving school now in the 21st century who still think that they're going to walk into a job, and if they work hard and they're loyal and dedicated, that job is going to sustain them for life. And sadly, the loyalty that people feel to their employers is rarely reciprocated.
Yeah,
and totally. Kids are going to have lots of careers these days. And let's face it, you know, retirement age is going up and up. We're all more healthier for longer. You know, people are going to be working into their 70s and 80s. And who the hell wants to be doing the same job you thought you wanted to do when you were 21?
I think the thing for me, and we talk a lot in coaching about resonating with our audience, and I'm kind of sitting here now thinking, if I was a 14-year-old kid in school, am I going to be more interested in listening to The Reign of William the Conqueror or learning about what is artificial intelligence?
Exactly. What is artificial intelligence and how can I best utilize it to earn a living?
Yeah.
Because there are a lot of people who are forgotten, in inverted commas, that tends to be the language of the moment, who, if they knew how to create a small business and then grow it, wouldn't need to be forgotten.
Yeah, it's a great subject, and I could talk all day about this because I actually mentor three mentees who are 20 years old, and they're all different in different respects, but they are the entrepreneurs of tomorrow.
Yeah.
And I see these sparks and I have these kind of conversations with them, and it's so relevant. And this is talking not to my peers. These people are younger than my youngest kids.
Yeah.
No. And it's real because these are the people now who've got to go out and find a job, earn a living, live longer, provide for the families, etc.
Exactly.
So talking of possibly maybe doing the wrong things, coaches, we use the stat, don't we, a lot, the 4 out of 5 probably don't run a meaningful or successful business.
They fail.
And it probably wraps up after a year or two. Do you want to talk to our listeners a little bit as to the inspiration for starting the coaching revolution and why that stat perhaps was the catalyst for you?
Paul, Hank and I had experience of working with some coaches, quite a reasonable community of coaches, who we could see were failing. They were failing. And they were failing because they were following the advice of a kind of coach marketing company that they were following, that they just kind of bought into. And the advice they were given wasn't working. And the advice was, you know, go talk to anyone who. And the problem with that is that anyone who isn't a real person. And we sat and said, why are these coaches failing? What is it that they need to know? And what they needed to know was how to personalize their offering, how to make it relevant to one kind of client, and then how to be in the right place and talk the language of that one kind of client. And so we approached that organization and we said, look, we think these coaches need some mentoring. This is what we propose we're going to do. Don't worry, leave us to it. And they said, no, not interested. And we went, Right, okay. And so we sort of sat there a bit surprised by that and thought, well, do you know what? We're going to do it anyway. We're going to do it anyway. And when we set off, I have to tell you, that was, it was quite a cross conversation. I'm saying this like this. I was kind of like, 82% of coaches fail. That is absolutely unacceptable.
You've had 2-3 years to calm down, Sarah. That's why.
I know. I know. But they can still get riled about it, because 82% of coaches fail in the first 2 years is the stat. And I think that's a red herring, because they don't fail in the first 2 years. In most cases, that 82% fail to launch in the first place. They don't find their first paying client, or not somebody who's paying a professional rate. You know, they might do a bit of coaching for a tenner an hour, or you know, 50 quid or something, but they don't know how to consistently gain clients who want to pay them a professional rate for their coaching. And I want to change the world, Jeff. Now, I am no longer a spring chicken. I have the energy of a spring chicken, but I am actually I am an old chicken dressed in spring chicken feathers. And I can't change the world on my own. I cannot change the world on my own. And I believe that the way to change the world is through coaching. Because I think, in fact, I know that coaching can bring out amazing things in people. It can bring out life-changing decisions and insights and inspirations. But the vast majority of people, like 99% of people, have no idea what coaching is. And so when new coaches get the coaching qualification and they think what they've got is a coaching business, actually what they've got is a coaching certificate and, you know, a patient, but and the passion, but no business development skills. And so they go out and they talk about, I can help you set goals and I can help you remove limiting beliefs and overcome mental barriers. And the honest truth is, nobody gives a toss about those things, because most people don't have a goal. I mean, I've worked with people who say, oh, I'd love to have a goal. I've just no idea what I want. I just know I don't want this. Which is the case in the majority, I think. And, you know, you talk about a limiting belief. I can help you remove limiting beliefs. Immediately, everybody in the room thinks, well, she's not talking about me because I haven't got any limiting beliefs. Because the thing about a limiting belief is that until you realize it's a limiting belief, it is simply your truth. It's like the dome in the Truman Show, isn't it? It's just the truth. And it's only the moment at which you question something that you believed to be true that you go, oh my word, that's not true. That means that actually I can do this, that I couldn't do before.
The coaching revolution has been going for what, 2 and a bit years?
Yeah. September 27th, 2017 was the day.
Okay, it's 2.25 years. And I probably lived through half of the life of the coaching revolution. So I kind of half know the answer. But for those of people listening here today and saying, what's the coaching revolution? Do you want to talk through the first 2 years and maybe how it's gone, some of the pitfalls, what you've learned, how it's going at the moment, and perhaps your proudest moments as well during that time, Sarah?
Okay. Siri's joining in with me, because if somebody says Sarah, it sounds remarkably like Sarah.
Ah, gotcha.
So when we set off, what we thought was we would help half a dozen, possibly 10 UK-based coaches get their act together. That's what we suspected would be. You know, we were each working as coaches. This was never going to be a full-time thing. It was always going to be hey, we can help you, a few coaches. And we just did not anticipate what was going to happen. And we've discussed since then how, frankly, naive that was. You know, there's an 82% statistic for a reason, isn't there? And by the time we reached December 2018, so not even 18 months later, we were literally mentoring coaches from all over the world.
Yeah.
We were from literally Bogota to Brisbane. And we were, whoa, this is from my kitchen table in Cumbria. We work from home. I have an office, but actually I work in the kitchen because it's just where I like to work. And no matter how, where Paul says the office up, where he goes, look, I've made a beautiful place for you to work. I still work at the kitchen table. And so I think that getting to December 2018 and realizing that we'd met our five-year goals. And I have to tell you, when I say five-year goals, they weren't goals. It was a five-year, wouldn't it be lovely if, wish list. We didn't actually really, but, you know, we were doing the, okay, so we'll do this and we'll do this and, you know, five-year goals. But honestly, what each of us thought was we were going to help half a dozen UK-based coaches. So that was a bit of a shock. And the thing is, we'd never revisited those goals until that time, at which point we went, shit, look, people are listening. People want to be involved. And the proudest moment, bar none, was when I realized that our success rate is the other way around. 4 out of 5 of our coaches get paying clients. And I want to add a swift caveat in there that the 1 in 5 who doesn't is the 1 in 5 who doesn't want to do the work, who doesn't want to be consistent with their marketing, who knows what they need to do and decide that they don't want to do it. And that's, I'm not criticizing them, that's their choice. They have the knowledge and the understanding, they know what is required, and they've chosen not to.
But effectively, Sarah, what's happened is you have disrupted the coaching industry very successfully.
Yes.
Because you've turned that stat completely on its head, haven't you?
Yes.
The 80-20 rule is now the 20-80 rule.
Yes. Yeah. And that, when I realized, it's actually not so long ago that I sat down and did the math, as they say in America, that I realized that actually our coaches succeed. What we are teaching absolutely works. And really topical, yesterday I did part 2 of a 2-part webinar for the ICF UK chapter. And I was kind of sharing, it was about how to build an ideal client. And so the first part was me kind of talking about why they don't believe me and how to start looking at creating an ideal client. And then the second part was putting some meat on the skeleton, because they had homework between the two sessions and they were putting meat on the skeleton. And I got a message last night. So I finished delivering the second half at 1:30 yesterday. By 9 o'clock last night, I got a message from one of the attendees saying, I put one thing you suggested into action and I've picked up a client. Same day. I'm like, yes, this shit works.
You're absolutely right. And I think because you and Paul certainly live and breathe this every single day, and I kind of see how busy you work away at this and spreading the word. I hate the word evangelical because it kind of has other connotations, but I really do think that you are very evangelical about what you do for a reason, because you do believe. But one thing for me, and this is somebody, for those of you who don't know, I've probably been with the Coaching Revolution now about 15 months. And for me, it is very, very simple. For somebody who's been through a business environment for 30 plus years, run my own business, I couldn't believe how simple this is if you follow the process, if you embrace the values. And above all, Sarah, for me, it's not a sell and forget kind of business model that you're running.
No.
And I've seen this because I did my homework talking to other coaching companies who wanted large amounts of monies off me. Mm-hmm. They were going to give me all the products I needed to go out there and be a successful coach. But what has impressed me the most is the community aspect, the Monday night lives, you know, the LinkedIn workshops, the quarterly get-togethers. And for me, that's been the biggest benefit to me as a coach growing my business. And one thing I'm thinking of now is that as I go out there in year one, I count last year as year zero for me.
Okay.
Year one is more about the visibility now. And I read a stat only yesterday. It says 84% of businesses who had a coach found it extremely beneficial.
Yeah.
Yet I couldn't find a stat that told me how many businesses or businessmen actually have a coach, and I suspect it's very low, which therefore represents a huge opportunity.
Yeah, I can tell you why it's very low, because they don't understand what a coach can do for them. And the reason they don't understand what a coach can do for them isn't because they haven't met a load of coaches. They have met a load of coaches. But they've met a load of coaches at networking events or professional development days, and these coaches have said, I'm a coach. I can help you reach goals and overcome limiting beliefs and mental barriers and yada, yada. And they just look at them and think, it's nothing to do with me. And so nobody has spoken directly to them and said, hey, Mr. Business Owner, Mrs. Business Owner, I recognize the problems that you have. I understand how they're impacting and manifesting in your life, and I can help you overcome them. And this is why the coaching industry is not saturated. Not only is there a massive, massive opportunity, but the coaching industry can never be saturated, because every single one of us will have a different ideal client. So even in the coaching revolution, just off the top of my head, I can think of four career coaches that are part of the coaching revolution. They all have utterly different ideal clients, and they're all getting clients. You know, they're all getting paying clients from the activity that they're doing, and they do not tread on each other's toes. They're completely different kind of micro worlds within the world of career coaching. And one of the things that I always say is, we could all live on the same street and we wouldn't be each other's competition.
Yeah. And above all, I think they also help each other. You know, within our own community, I've probably talked to half a dozen of the other revolutionaries regularly.
Yes.
And we help each other and we exchange thoughts. And that's what I love about it.
It's the community part for me is actually the most important, because the mentoring process, so, you know, people, what people buy from us is 10 sessions of mentoring. Mm. What they get from us is the whole world. You know, the 10 sessions of mentoring is like the beginning of the journey. But of course, they don't know that when they join us. They join for the 10 sessions of mentoring. But that's a learning process. That's learn how to create your ideal client and create them, create your marketing message, work out where your client is, work out how to measure, tweak, etc., etc. So by the time you get to the end of those 10 sessions, you've got a rinse and repeatable formula for getting paying clients. But yeah, after that, that's when you grow. That's when you become part of the community. You become useful to the others. The others become useful to you. And you know, those meetups that we have, from 3 times a year, we meet up in Birmingham. And for me, they are the highlight of our calendar, because it's great seeing people on a screen every Monday night and you know, the various other times, because we've now got our 7:30 on a Monday morning accountability call started this week. That was all a bit bleary, but hey, it was great. it's great to see people on screen, and it's massively better than, for example, a phone call. You know, technology is wonderful, isn't it? But the face-to-face stuff, and you know, I'm a hugger. The opportunity to give people a hug and to see them interacting and to see them sharing, and they walk away from those days going, when's the next one? When's the next one?
Yeah, great, right.
Properly brilliant.
I've got one more question about the coaching revolution. I'm going to finish on something a little bit more light.
Okay.
So I saw something on Monday night in our webinar, which I really liked, and it was a guy called Scott.
Yep.
And he had a postcard saying, wish you were here, and had a date on it. So I'm going to ask you the same question. 31st December 2021, where do you want the coaching revolution to be?
Okay, by then we will have run a public workshop in the UK, in London.
Mm-hmm.
We will have run a public workshop in Melbourne.
Okay.
So an opportunity for people who are not coaching revolutionaries to come to a day to learn the basics. Obviously, it can only be the basics because there's a load of reflection and stuff needs to go on, but the basics of how to find paying clients and to have the opportunity to kind of experience the revolution, because it is a revolution. We will have mentors in South America. We will have mentees in North America. Interestingly, North America is the one area that we haven't cracked it at all. We don't have any mentees from North America. We have mentees in South America, in Australia, in Asia, in Europe, Antarctic and Antarctic, no. But, you know, they're everywhere. But we don't have anyone in North America. So we will crack North America. People over there will go, gosh, those Brits know what they're talking about when it comes to this, how to get paying clients. And people will understand that when they finished their coach training, the other half of the skills that they need, the fastest and most cost-effective way to do that is to join the coaching revolution.
Great. So it's global domination. That's what you're saying.
World domination.
Brilliant. Okay. So I'm a little bit conscious of time. And the last couple of minutes, we're going to have a bit of fun. And this takes me back to when I was a teenager. Did you ever watch Tiz Was?
Yes.
Remember? Do you remember the fan? The guy who was stood behind with the custard pies. Right. Okay. The Phantom Landflinger.
Yes, right. In Justin Black.
My claim to fame once is I got dragged on stage at the Liverpool Empire and I got flanned by the Phantom Flinger.
Brilliant.
So this is an imaginary custard pie. Okay. And if you don't answer in 3 seconds, you get a custard pie.
Okay.
So you've got to be quick. It's called Quick Fire Fun. And the first couple of questions are going to be one word answers, and then it's going to be either or. So one word your classmates would describe you at school.
Chatty.
It's no surprise. Okay, you're on a desert island. You've got food, water and shelter. What two other items would you want with you?
Paul and Bo.
Okay. And Bo is your dog?
My dog. One of my dogs. Yeah. He's my son. Yeah.
Okay. Either or, Sarah.
Yep.
G&T or tea?
Ooh, tea if I have to choose.
Okay. Saver or spender?
Saver these days.
Yeah, I had to think about that one, didn't you?
Well, I used to be a real spender, but I'm not anymore.
Okay, that's just age, isn't it? You become more sensible as you get older.
Absolutely, yeah.
Here's a loaded question. Talker or listener?
Both.
Which one more than the other?
It depends on the situation. I used to be a talker. These days, I do both.
Okay. Rolling Stones or the Beatles?
Beatles.
Okay. And final question, if you could have 1 hour anywhere in the world right now, where would it be and why?
It would be at the Serowe Game Reserve in Botswana. Camping with a table set up and a bunch of friends. It would be the evening. We'd have a fire in. And we'd have a bottle of red and a bottle of white and some chat. And if we were lucky, one of the friends would be a musician and would have brought a guitar. And we would sit and listen to the animals and the crickets and all the various bush noises that are going on. And we would chew the fat. That
Brilliant.
Would be my perfect hour.
That sounds absolutely ideal.
Well, it'd be fantastic.
Yeah. Brilliant. And I think that's a perfect way to leave this kind of 30 minutes, you know, with that vision as well, because what we've done is we've talked about all kinds of interesting stuff. And first of all, can I just thank you for taking the time out and sharing another side of Sarah that perhaps some of us don't really see or hear about. So thank you for your time, Sarah, and good luck with the coaching revolution and your world domination.
Thanks, Jeff. Thanks very much.
Cheers.
You've been listening to Coffee with the Coaching Revolutionaries from thecoachingrevolution.com. If you go to Facebook and search Coaching Republic, you can find our business building community, especially for coaches. See you there.